Blog Talk Radio.
Brothers and sisters of light and shadow, thank you so much for joining me tonight on Soul Empowerment Radio. I'm your host, Michael. Tonight we'll be journeying into the word yogi and talking about what does it mean when we say be a yogi or when we say I am a yogi. What does that mean? It's a word we use a lot, but we don't often give these words enough attention. We're talking about what does it actually mean to embody these words as we step onto the journey of being a yogi. Like, what does it mean? Like, and how are we integrating that state of being into the various aspects of our life? So we'll be talking a little about that tonight. Just kicking off the show again, as usual. We had a big hiatus, and we'll have more in the future because I have lots of trips coming up to D.C., and it's just really hard to, you know, rely on the interwebs and the connection when I'm doing all the traveling. So we usually put the show on hiatus during those times. So we're going to broadcast as much as possible, get as much information out as possible to everybody. So we can continue moving forward in consciousness and do what we do best, talk about spiritual things, you know? So a little housekeeping, as always, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/mbrazel. You can find me on my blogs at soulinteraction.com and my yoga blog at inkedyogi.com. You can also find me on my website at michaelbrazel.com. And if you like the show and you want to make a donation to help cover the costs for keeping the show up and running, you can go to my website at michaelbrazel.com. Bottom of the services page, there is a donate button. Click that button. Any amount helps out, you know, so even a dollar helps keep the show up and running. What else? What else? What else? That's pretty much it as far as housekeeping. If you want to contact me, if you have show ideas or even want to be a guest on the show or just want to call in and, you know, share your story with us. You can email me at michael@michaelbrazel.com. You can always call in tonight, 347-326-9263. 347-326-9263. There's also a Skype button on the show page. And be sure you click follow because we're going to be doing a lot of shows tomorrow and beyond with Taylor Hammond Foster again. We'll be doing another episode of Evolve Spirit Radio. So we have lots of stuff coming up. So be sure that you are tuning in and clicking that follow button so you can join us as I put the shows up and out for the world to listen to. And remember, there are tons of archive shows. We have almost 300 shows in the archives. So you can go back, listen to it all, find episodes from the past, and like dig in. Put your fingers in the soil and just dig in, because there's lots of good stuff out there. What else? People are signing on. I see people joining the chat room. Be sure you share the show if you can. Put it on your Facebook pages. Send it out to all of your friends, your enemies, your parents. Invite your pets. Whoever wants to come along is more than welcome to join us for the show tonight. So what's going on in the world? People are having crazy dreams. I've noticed on Facebook, like and just people around me, everyone's talking about how wild and crazy their dreams are. So there's a lot of shifting that's happening. So be sure you're giving yourself room and time to be grounded. And how do we ground? The simplest way to ground is just get outside and touch the earth. If you can put your bare feet on the earth and just literally ground yourself, earth, touch the ground beneath your feet, touch it with your hands even if you can. And that brings you back into a place of discharging some of that extra energy you may be holding on to. A lot of solar activity, a lot of crazy astrological alignments happening, and that tends to affect how we move through the world energetically. So be sure, if you're feeling like you're not quite in your body, to do some of that work of just moving the energy. Be sure you watch what you're eating. Be sure you are honoring the body by giving it delicious, nourishing food. Be sure that you are exercising. Get the body moving, even if it's just for a few minutes. It doesn't have to be these really long, crazy workouts. It can be a quick 15-minute little jog around your neighborhood. It can be just a quick yoga session in your living room. It doesn't have to be anything massive or big, but we want to be sure that we are honoring the body, because as we honor the body, we're allowing that excess energy or even that stagnant energy that's in the body to move. And that keeps us in better states of health. It keeps us in better states of connection to, you know, just our journey in general. But you want to be sure that you are taking time to honor the body in whatever way feels right and feels best for you. So do that. Take time for those delicious nuggets through the day. So I am journeying into the world of fruitarianism, and it's been quite exciting so far. I'm not really sure how it's going to end up. I do know that it's not that easy. It has its easy moments. Like, I have moments where it's just flying like nobody's business, and then I have moments when it's kicking me in the face, because I'm someone who likes to experiment. So I don't just go in with the expectation that it's going to be something I buy just at face value. Like, I'm going to go in and test the waters. And every time that I've tested myself and brought in something that hasn't been fruit, my body rejects it completely. So loving the fact that I'm eating lots of fruit and lots of nutrients and micronutrients and the phytonutrients and all that delicious stuff for health and well-being. But I'm also noticing I have to eat a lot because I'm pretty active. So I've been doing running and increasing my yoga practice and also increasing my gym time. So I'm having to watch what I'm eating a little bit more consistently to be sure I'm getting enough of calories in and enough of the carbohydrates so that I don't, you know, fog out. But do that stuff, right? Like, take yourself to the next level. So if you want to challenge yourself and to be healthier, do these things where you evolve your diet, evolve your commitment to your body. What are you doing to honor the body? So be sure you're taking time to do some of that work in whatever way you can for yourself, because it's so important. We're at such a critical time now where the world is changing so rapidly around us that we have to be sure the temple of the soul is taken care of. Tend your garden. Be sure that you are giving yourself the things you need for sustenance. Be sure that if your body's craving vegetables or fruits, or it's craving to have a fast or to rest, give it those things that it's craving. If it's craving exercise, give it exercise, because it's trying to balance you out. The body knows it's at the core – that primal part of us knows what is needed to heal, to balance, and to be whole within the structure, energetically and spiritually and physically, in the world that you're moving through. So honor it. Do what needs to be done to honor it. So what does it mean to be a yogi? Because we use these words in spirituality a lot. It's like every year we get a new catchword. You know, when the big mediums show up on TV, then everyone wants to be a medium. For a while, the word was shaman. Everyone was a shaman for a while. I mean, everybody was a shaman. And I got to the point where I didn't really know what a shaman was anymore, because you'd see books on shamanic Reiki, you'd see books on shamanic witchcraft, you'd see books on shamanic this, and usually it's just, you know, these Anglo people writing the books. It wasn't even people from native cultures writing the books on shamanism. So it becomes these catchwords in spirituality that we end up using. But oftentimes we use them without really defining what the word means. And I think it's important that if we are going to walk a spiritual path or a spiritually engaged experience, that we take time to define the words we're using in relation to our spiritual connection to the path. So if I'm claiming that I'm a yogi, I should know what a yogi is. And not just what a yogi is, but what a yogi does and how a yogi moves through the world. Because for me, and when I talk tonight, all I'm offering is my own perspectives on what a yogi is. And really, I hope that it's just a template. So I'm not trying to define what yogi is for everybody else. All I can do is define what it is for me, because that's the most important definition that I need. And it's going to be different for everyone. So I hope that by showing you how I go through the process of understanding and integrating this word into my own experience, that it'll give you a chance to create space for your own processes of asking the questions that need to be asked so that you can take that a little bit deeper, right? And we can do this really with any word. So oftentimes people, you know, we claim words. We claim, like, what does it mean to be gay? To be a member of the gay community? Does the word gay for you only mean your sexual preference? Or does it go further in how you move through the community or how you self-identify? Does it impact how you dress? Does it impact how you talk? What is the connection you have to the words you use to identify yourself? These words we use become part of our personality, and they become part of these identifiers that allow us to have movement through the spaces we occupy energetically, spiritually, and physically. So it's important to ask, what does this word mean to me? Like, what does it mean to be a carpenter? What does it mean to be a hairstylist? What does it mean to be a yogi? Because if I'm using this word, I really want to know, what does it mean to me to be this? Because unless you define that word for yourself, it's going to be hard for you to define your motives for wanting to do it. And really, when we're talking about spirituality especially, we want to be sure that the thing that we're doing is allowing us to be of service to the greater good. We want to be in service to the communities we're stepping into. And you always want to look at, how does this word impact how I'm able to be of service? Is it creating restriction, or is it creating expansion? Where are the edges? So first, we define what is yoga. So yoga really, in its simplest term, means to unite or to yoke. So it's yoking ourselves or uniting ourselves with divinity through the processes and practices of yoga. And there's quite a few. We're not going to get too specific tonight because I just want to keep this rather broad. And when we're talking about yogi specifically, what does it mean to wear the label? But we'll do other shows where we get really hyper-specific with the aspects of yoga itself. But for me, I take the word unite out, because to unite can be really tough for some people to accept that word. And a word that I like better is integrate. Because for me, the path of yoga is the path of integration. And it's integrating these physical postures or the asana into my awareness of my own body. The asana let me integrate my consciousness into my body. It lets me understand where the tightness resides in my body. It lets me see where the emotions reside within the physical body. It brings me back to the breath. So the very act of doing asana or posture work in yoga is integration. You're integrating breath with body, with movement, with divinity. So you're integrating all those aspects into one singular deal. And that's what we call yoga. That's how I define yoga. So a lot of us will use the word yogi, but what does it mean to be a yogi? Is being a yogi just doing yoga on your yoga mat? And it might be, like, that might just be yogi for you. And that's perfectly fine if that's how you're defining being a yogi. But we also have to understand that there is a lot more to being a yogi if you really look at the greater context of using these words. And I think, you know, the problem that I have is it becomes so trendy to use these words. Like even the word vegan, we tend to make these things very trendy and they begin to lose power. And one of the things that we do or want to do in the spiritual community is hold the power that comes with claiming that word. So if I'm a vegan, I'm not just doing it because everybody else is doing it. What's my purpose for wanting to be a vegan? What's my purpose for wanting to be a yogi? What's the greater reason behind choosing that word of all the other words I could have chosen to identify myself? Like, why did I choose that? And what's so important about that word? And I think sometimes, too, we begin to look at magazines and things and we start to say, ah, well, that's what I want to be. So I'm just going to put the label on myself. And then people will assume that because I wear that label that I can do all these really great yoga things. Right. But it's not quite that simple. It's not quite that simple. Like even for yoga itself as a practice, like what is your motivation for showing up to the practice? And a lot of times we first move into these things through what I call selfish means. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like vegetarianism and veganism even, people come first for selfish reasons. We come because we want to improve our health. It becomes all about first. Yoga, I come to the mat because I want to lose weight or to increase flexibility or because I'm sick or because I need to de-stress myself. So we have to first examine what are our reasons for showing up to this practice. And you also have to understand, especially a practice like yoga, that you are showing up to thousands of years of collective energy and intention when you come into a yoga class. So you can't do the postures and remove the spiritual components of the posture because you are tapping into the collective built-up energy, the ritual of doing down dog. When you do your down dog, you are doing the ritual of down dog. Each yoga posture is in itself a meditation. So when you do that posture, yes, you might just be doing it because you want to de-stress your lower back and build some upper body strength. But you're also doing the meditation practice that is down dog. You can't separate the two. And you really want to understand that going into yoga, because yoga itself is not a religion, but it's something that can integrate and blend anything out there. I've seen Christian yoga, I've seen kung fu yoga, I've seen, you name it, there's a yoga for it. I've seen, there's hot yoga. So there's people are expanding in how they connect to the practice. But for us to show up, we want to be sure that what we ask ourselves, why am I showing up to this practice? Like, why yoga? Of all the things I could be doing, why is yoga the thing that I'm choosing to do? And we want to go behind just those selfish reasons. We want to start asking, what within me is really calling this practice to me at this time? Is there something greater that I'm seeking by doing this practice? Am I seeking to expand the awareness of how the breath moves through my body? Am I looking to connect to a sense of oneness and community through my practice? Do I want to understand how yoga can help me move through areas of social justice and activism through the awareness of my own body and breath? So we start to look at these various layers that are also included in the practice of yoga that we can then integrate back into our lives. For a lot of people, the yoga practice begins and ends on the mat. And that's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing. I appreciate people who go out and do fantastic yoga practices and really get into the work of doing yoga for the body. Because when you leave that practice, you're taking it with you. Whether you choose to or not, you are taking it with you. And as you improve yourself through the physical practice and you honor the temple and you tend that garden that is the body, you walk through the world a little bit more elevated. And that's a very important thing. The problem with doing it for selfish reasons is typically once we achieve said goal, so I lose those extra 10 pounds I've been trying to lose, or I no longer have lower back pain, we'll typically stop the practice. And this is where you see yo-yo dieting and yo-yo working out happen, because we achieve a little bit of a goal and then we shift it back. So I view yoga as a lifestyle practice. It's not a workout. It's a lifestyle practice because it's changing the way I live, just like veganism and vegetarianism and these things that we do, that if we don't do them for a greater good and a greater purpose, we'll typically put them on a shelf. Because we've achieved what we needed to achieve within our own bodies, and then we'll abandon the practice. So a lot of people stop working out. And of course, people also stop working out because they're not seeing the results. And typically, when we do that, we stop too soon. So it's either we stop because we get the results, or we stop because we don't get any results. Rather than understanding that the results are is just showing up, that is the result of the practice. The hardest part of any spiritual practice is showing up. Yoga especially, the minute you show up to the practice, you've done the work. After that, everything else is integration, modification, and exploration. Showing up is the most important part of the practice, and until we do that, nothing else is going to happen. So you could say being a yogi is showing up. But not just showing up to your yoga mat, showing up to your life. Yoga is also a powerful act of surrender. Yoga shows us that when we show up to the unknown and just let go, that we're going to have an experience. And we're going to have an experience of release. And when you show up to that yoga class and you give over control of your life for that hour or whatever time you're in that class with the instructor, you are engaging the practice of surrender. And the idea is, if we understand those subtleties within the dynamic of the class, I can then take that back to my life. Like, where in my life do I need to just surrender and release control? And there's always fear, like in yoga. You know, I always get, you know, the fear also as an instructor, because I don't know who's coming to class and I don't know like what I have to do to bring everything together, but it just always happens, right? And it happens because we show up and then we just go on the journey together, but it's all surrender. And it's not just you surrendering to the instructor, it's just the instructor surrendering to you, because they are there as an act of service to help you integrate for that hour and a half, the body, the breath, the energy, the movement. It's all surrender. So it's just not you surrendering to them, it's them surrendering to you. So looking in your life and saying, where do I need surrender? Where can I surrender a little bit more deeply to the experience? Where am I holding back from showing up in my life? And what would happen if I decide to show up fully for once? Relationships are a good example where we typically don't show up enough. We we do just enough in our relationships to maintain the relationship, but often we're not having those deeper, more meaningful conversations to establish and maintain the relationship because we've lost a sense of intimacy. And being a yogi is also being intimate with yourself, because the minute you step onto that yoga mat, you're entering into an intimate space with your own body. But with that class and the people around, you're entering and engaging in intimacy. And when we look at the word intimacy, it brings up things in people. It brings up a variety of different things. Some people have a hard time with this word because I feel personally as a culture we've lost connection to the word intimacy. We don't really understand what it means to be intimate anymore. We have lots of distractions that take us out of the present. Intimacy happens through vulnerability. And, you know, I can only speak from the gay perspective, but in my community, in the gay community, it's a predominantly hookup culture now. And we've confused intimacy and sex. So sex and intimacy have become intertwined in not the most positive way. Because if sex is the only way you can engage in intimacy, when the sex dies in the relationship, then everything else begins to go with it. Intimacy is powerful because intimacy can bond things in a way that just the physical can't. And there is intimacy in silence. When you're in that yoga class and you get really quiet because you're listening to the instructor, you're listening to the inhale and the exhale, the inflow of the breath and the outflow of the breath, there's an intimacy in that silence. When you can really sit with your partner, your boyfriend or your girlfriend, your husband or your wife, and you can sit in the silence of that person and just feel who they are without there being any words to take over the narrative. When you're in yoga, there really aren't any words to wrap around what you're doing. You're just doing this posture, and you can't really wrap the words around the experience because there are no words being used. You're silent pretty much the entire time you're in that class. And that's something a lot of people don't even notice. Like, for that entire time, you know, yeah, we laugh and we'll have fun and we'll do a little, you know, giggling and things in class. But for the majority of the time that you're in that class, you're in silence. And that's a very powerful thing because it's very intimate when you're silent. You listen to your body. You listen to the, you know, the cracking joints, and you hear, you know, the popping of the joints and the strains of the muscles and the subtle sounds of the body. You hear the inhale and the exhale. It's very powerful and it's very intimate. And a yogi is someone who can engage that intimacy not just with their own bodies on the yoga mat, but also with life. Get intimate with life. That's what being a yogi is. It's being vulnerable. It's being okay with being yourself. Because a yogi is also about embracing all your flaws. You're going to fall in yoga. You're going to fall over. You're not going to get a posture just right. And it's going to be frustrating. But that's yoga. Yoga is about coming to the edge. Yoga is not about playing it safe. If you're playing it safe in yoga, you got to go deeper. Yoga is not about playing it safe. Yoga is about going to the edge. Like, even the edge of the yoga mat. We got to get to the edge. Because it's once you go across the edge, like you're really pushing against that edge, that's where change begins to happen. A lot of times I see people in yoga, they'll only do the lowest level of the posture. They won't advance themselves beyond the lowest level because there's a fear of what happens if I'm going to fall down. It's usually not even the fear that they can't do it. It's the fear of being embarrassed in the class that keeps us from doing the challenging postures. Which is what, when I teach, I don't call a posture advanced. I just begin cueing. And then people just end up following me, and then we'll just all fall together, or we'll all do it together. But really, when you don't build it up as something to be afraid of as an instructor, we remove the fear that doesn't have to be there. there's a fear of challenging ourselves. And I feel as a yoga instructor and as a yogi, it's my job to challenge myself. But also as a yogi, it's my job to challenge others and to help them come into a deeper awareness of who they are through that place of shared challenge. So for instance, you know, my job is it's spirituality. So I get to do this professionally. So as an instructor, it's my job to bring people to their edge. So if I notice someone in my class who has never done an advanced posture, I may go to them one-on-one and ask them, do they want to try something a little different? And we may just work on evolving the practice a bit. And this also works in reverse, where I see advanced yogis who are always just doing, you know, the highly advanced modified versions of the postures. I challenge them to bring it back down to doing the very basic. Come back down to doing simplistic, what you may perceive as easy movements. And for them, it offers the same challenge, because oftentimes when we get so far down the road, we forget where the roots are. And to do yoga especially, it's beautiful to go into those advanced, beautiful spaces where you're bending like pretzels. But you want to come back and water the roots. I don't like calling classes beginner classes, because I feel we're all beginners in yoga. No matter how many years you've been doing it, the minute you step into somebody else's class that you've never taken a class from this person before, you're now a beginner again. Because you don't know where this person is going to go or what sequence they're going to do or what crazy meditations they may lead. You're a beginner. Everyone's a beginner. So I call my classes fundamental and then progressive. So the fundamental classes we're working on the watering the roots. So when we're working on fundamental practices, we're watering the roots. And this is for everything. Everything you do in life has fundamentals to it. And if you're not revisiting those fundamentals, it's important to come back to that work. And that's what a yogi does. A yogi integrates by going back to the fundamentals. A yogi is not afraid to go back to the beginning, to put their hands in the soil, to feel where their roots are. Because typically when we've gotten all the way down over here and we're doing these really advanced postures and we're not honoring the roots, we may end up killing the tree. You know, we don't come back and do that work of honoring where we started. And we can cause injury to the self. We can cause injury to our bodies if we're not coming back and doing progressive core work or coming back and doing some more simplistic yogic movements that allow us to see where we may be holding resistance in our bodies. And doing only advanced postures and really just staying in that advanced space really taxes the body. It puts extra strain on certain muscles. So it's important to come back to the beginning. Just like with anything else, if you come back to the beginning, you may find new things there. You may find new roots growing. If your practice is, I don't know, like business, right? And you're only working in those higher echelons of making money, you want to come back to the roots, the fundamentals of your business. Like, are you living in agreement with your mission statement? Or do you need to evolve that mission statement? Or is there room for expansion? And you really can see that room when you come back to the roots. Because if your roots are strong and you're coming back and revisiting your fundamentals, you're able then to see where you can truly grow because you're honoring it from the base to where you currently are. And that's how growth happens. And a yogi is not afraid to come back to those places because as a yogi, our path is the path of integration. It's looking at how can I observe the various aspects of my life as a practice. You're not just a yogi when you're on the yoga mat. We don't take off these labels. I guess you can. Like, if you don't want to be a yogi, you don't have to be a yogi. You know, you don't have to wear any labels if you don't want to. But if we're going to use it and we're going to do the practice, do the practice. So don't just wear a word because it's trending. If you're going to wear the word yogi, then be a yogi. Get out there and do yoga. doesn't have to just be yoga of a physical movement. It can be yoga of service. Go out there and volunteer at a homeless shelter. Karma yoga is doing practice that is of service and in service to those around you. It's honoring yourself through honoring other people first and really putting them in that place of worship. You're worshiping those around you as brothers and sisters of shadow and light. And it really helps us to connect more deeply to each other. And the path of service is an important one for us to walk. And if you're, no matter what you do, there is always a space within that work to be of service. You can also just be of service outside of your work if there isn't a way to integrate your work into the path of service. So look at where you can be of service to others. Volunteer at a food kitchen, right? Go to like a soup kitchen and volunteer. Buy some sandwiches and give them to the homeless people that you may see every day on your way to work. If you can't even do that, just stop and talk to them, right? Give your time. If nothing else, offer your time and say, what is your story? There's a time that recently I didn't have any money to give this person, but I just sat and talked with them for a while. You know, it's being of service in whatever way you can through the means that are available to you. So it doesn't mean you have to give everything away or feed everybody or do that, right? It just means you start where you are and you give what you can. And for me, that's what a yogi does. A yogi is someone who gets off the mat and walks the yoga as a practice in life. And it could be something you can even start by looking at where are the yoga postures helping you off the mat? Are you noticing you're sitting with a better posture? Are you noticing that you are breathing a little bit more deeply? Are you noticing that arguments aren't affecting you as they have in the past? Are you noticing you're softening against the edges of your own experience? Are you noticing changes within your relationships? That's what a yogi does. A yogi really just notices and works at getting better at noticing how they're moving through the world. Because if I'm in a place of awareness, my awareness allows me to have connection. And through connection, I have clarity. And through clarity, I can have deeper presence. And through that presence, I can affect change in my life and in the lives of those around me. So where are you on that spectrum right now? Are you totally oblivious to where you are in your own life? Or are you bringing an awareness and attention to things within you that need to change? And what can you offer right now to this part of yourself that might be a little discordant? Where can you offer love in your life to yourself right now? And let's just take a moment to do that. Like, where in you right now needs a little extra love? Where in you needs some movement? Is your lower back tense? Is your neck tense? Do your shoulders need shrugging and stretching? Are you holding your breath? Can you breathe a little bit deeply, more deeply right now? Can you take the breath down, down into the stomach? Deep belly breath. Can you exhale fully and deeply? Can you release what needs to be released right now? So, doing this work is self-examination. It's understanding where you are in the world. And for me, the path of integration is the most difficult path to walk, but it is the most important path to walk because it allows me to move through the world with grace, but not just grace, but through power also. When I'm not leaving any of my parts behind and I'm inviting my full self to the party, I am able to stand whole within my experience? Am I letting my anger define how I move through relationships? And what is your anger serving? One thing I see a lot on Facebook is passive aggressiveness, right? And who does that serve? I have that little time hop app, right? And I remember going through my breakup, you know, a couple of years back now, and there was some passive aggressiveness through that 5-year relationship. And time hop takes you back about five years worth of Facebook posts. It picks, I don't know what it uses to pick the post, but it picks them. And I noticed all these passive-aggressive posts. And it's funny because even now that 3 years or 4 years have passed, I still remember what the post was about. That's how much power our words can have. And there wasn't any context around it, but I could read it and I knew exactly what the post was about. So we have to be careful of what we're putting out into the world. And what is that serving? What is your anger serving? And remember, forgiveness isn't for them, it's for me. And forgiveness is one of the most powerful acts of vulnerability that we can engage in. It's not saying, forgiveness isn't saying. We had this misconception about forgiveness also. There's this misconception that forgiveness is absolving them of their actions. And it's saying their actions are okay. And that's not what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is saying that I've come to a place of peace within myself that I can accept the release that comes with loving the entirety of this experience. So, where within you can you offer forgiveness right now? Is there a person or a place or an action that still resides in your consciousness that comes up frequently that you're having a hard time offering that space of love to? So an example I like to use is relationships. Relationships are always great places to really do this work, because it's through our relationships that we get the best mirrors. So in a relationship, the angrier you are at the end, and the angrier you stay at the person, the closer you pull them towards you. Or even in friendships that are ending on not the most high note, the angrier I stay at that individual, the more poison I'm taking. It takes a lot of work to be really, really angry at somebody. And what I learned through my past experiences is that in order to truly let someone go, you have to love them unconditionally. And I know, like, a lot of people, when they hear that, they gasp, like, oh, how could you love this person who caused you so much harm? But that's what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is loving someone unconditionally. Because by doing that, you're freeing yourself. Anger binds us. And it might not happen overnight. It doesn't have to happen right away. You could stay angry for a few years if you need to. Give yourself what you need. Be okay with being angry. But there will come a point where you realize the anger is just strangling you. That anger that you have for that individual really isn't doing anything to them, right? If I'm angry at someone, I'm just so angry at them, they probably care less about the fact that I'm angry. They might not even be thinking about me. And here I am, angry and defensive and just justifying my anger and putting passive-aggressive statements on my Facebook, or even like sending that person, like, you know, mean text. What's it doing? Who's it hurting? It's taking poison into your own body to kill somebody else. It never works. And there comes a point in your life where you slowly end up releasing it. But it comes so far down the road. And to do the work of integration, to do the work of a yogi, you really bring focus to that. You say, where in my life right now can I begin the work of forgiveness and the work of love? And when you really look at the spectrum of life, right, you realize we're going to die. Every single one of us are going to die. Nobody gets out alive. And even in yoga, we practice dying. At the very end of class, we practice shavasana, or the corpse pose. Every class, we practice dying. People don't get that part either. There's all these little subtle things that happen in yoga that people really don't get. I think if people like got these things, we'd have a lot less people taking yoga. But yoga, you practice dying. In a class, everyone practices dying for a few minutes, right? For about 10 minutes, we practice dying. And then we practice coming back. So we come out of class, and then we reincarnate back into our lives. But we are all going to die. And when you realize in the spectrum of life, if you've been on this earth for 30-something years, right, and you look at that time period, however long it lasted, you know, for me, my last relationship lasted 5 years. And in the 37 years that I've been on this earth, that 5 years is such a small little sliver of life experience. That relationship is like a sliver. And my life is just even more of a sliver in the collective of how long this earth has been in existence, right? You realize how finite and how inconsequential these things actually are. And you realize that holding on to it just keeps you away from enjoying these very few sacred moments that we have on this earth. And if you're spending time being angry at someone, it means you're not spending time loving and opening up to something else. Because if you hate this spoiled milk so much that you're going to keep it in your refrigerator just to be angry at it every time you open your refrigerator, you'll never have room for new milk. So we have to clean out the refrigerator. And yoga is also the practice of cleaning out. Being a yogi means I'm okay with disconnecting from those parts of myself that need to be released. The exhale, when we focus on working on breathing in yoga, is the inspiration, the inhalation, and the exhalation, the releasing, the letting go. Each release of breath takes us deeper into the posture. We inhale to enter the posture, we exhale to go deeper. And in that exhalation, we are surrendering to the edge. And we're exploring the edge of the posture. But we're also, with each exhalation, exploring the edges of our own life experience. So what in you right now could use a little bit more loving or a little bit more attention? Or what in you needs forgiveness? And can you begin to do that work, to do the work of the yogi, the work of integration, the work of self-examination? Can you do the work of loving unconditionally? In yoga, we talk about ahimsa. And ahimsa is the act of nonviolence. We hear people talk about ahimsa a lot, and it's nonviolence. You hear, you know, nonviolent protest, nonviolence. But oftentimes when we talk about this in yoga, it's often used in relation to others. Like, don't cause harm to others. Like, being vegan is not causing harm to animals, to making ethical decisions on how I eat my food. But we often forget that ahimsa is also something we have to direct at ourselves. Being kind to ourselves. Don't be violent with yourself. Honoring the body and watching how you're allowing your words to dictate your relationship to yourself. Can you be intimate with yourself? Can you say kind things to yourself for a change? can you bring your hand to your heart right now and just offer the words thank you to this body that does so much for us every single day? Like, think of how much your body does for you. And you don't have to think about it. Like, you get up, you walk, you poop, you shower, you brush your teeth, you eat, you go to work. And it's running your eyes, it's running the heart, it's moving blood to the body, the legs are walking, the arms are moving. These processes are happening so constantly and so consistently. And you don't even have to think about it. And it's just doing it. And we don't ever stop and thank the body. And beyond the prayer of thank you, offering the prayer of I love you to the body. And just taking a moment to tell the body I love you and thank you. And sometimes I even suggest doing that as a mantra. Just thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I love you. I love you. I love you. And eventually you lose where the I love you is going, and it just goes to wherever in the body it needs to go. In yoga, when we do some of these more deepening or postures, we're coming to contact with parts of our body, like our ankles or our toes, that we might not come into contact with. I often tell my class to stop and say thank you to your feet. Like, thank you so much for getting me to my class today and just for supporting me all day long. Thank you so much. And it may feel silly to do that, but gratitude is powerful. Gratitude shifts us into positivity. And it might feel silly, and that's okay too. It should feel silly. Because being silly uplifts us, right? It lets us just kind of let go and release a little bit. And yogis know how to have fun. And I think that's one of the things that I don't like about some yoga classes I go to. It's like yoga church. And I don't go to yoga to have like a church experience. I go to yoga because I want to have fun. I want to get into the body and I want to get in it. I want to fall down. I want to laugh when instructor makes a mistake. I want them to laugh when they make a mistake. So yoga should be fun. Like, being a yogi is about having fun, right? Because we talk about a lot of really heavy stuff, but the path of spirituality just needs to be more fun in general. Shit's heavy right now, like across the board. Presidential stuff is ramping up. There's carnage. There's tragedy. There are debates. There are wild things happening in this world constantly. But you have to find time to just laugh and to love. When we laugh, our heart center opens. When we laugh, we're creating medicine and release for the body. So asking yourself, where can I love myself a little bit more deeply, but where can I also have more fun? And fun shouldn't just be limited to remaining indoors. Go outside. We are animals by nature. We are suffering from a nature deficit within our lives. Get outside. Put your feet on the earth. Put your hands on the earth. Lay down on the earth for a few moments. I love doing yoga outside. And if you've never done yoga outside, and it's funny because I'll talk to these people who like have been practicing for years. I'm like, do you do yoga outside? And they're like, outside? I've never done yoga outside. Because they've always been in yoga studios. They've never gone outside to do yoga. And I remember the first time I did yoga outside, I was going into triangle, Trikonasana, and I reached my arm up to the sky and the ceiling wasn't there. And it was the first time I was aware that I was outside, and like my hand felt like it was reaching up into infinity. And when your feet are on the earth, you can feel like the grass beneath your toes, or I was on the beach and feeling the sand beneath me, and the sand made it just a little bit more unstable, so the earth was actually giving me a new workout to work with. So being a yogi is about getting outside. Being a yogi is about a lot of things. And like I said at the beginning, like these definitions and these articulations of yogi are just my own perspective. You may not agree with anything I said. You may agree with everything I said, and that's great. But the purpose of doing these types of shows is to challenge you with your own ideas of who you are. And for me, it's I honor the word yogi by living the yogi experience, but I'm always re-examining that. Like, what does it mean? Like, what does it really mean for me to be a yogi? And am I living to those ideals and principles that are important to me in order to use this word as an identifier of who I am? And take a moment to do that with yourself. Like, what are you? Like, what are you claiming? I am a what? And take a look at that. What does that mean? You can use it like with our gender identifiers. I am a man. What does that mean to me? Like, what does it mean to be a man? What are my responsibilities as a male? You know, and what were the edges with that word? Like, what are the challenges of being a male or being a man? We can use it with our, you know, sexual orientation identifiers. What does it mean to be straight? What does it mean to be gay? And what are my responsibilities? And where are the edges? And at those edges, that's where self-examination happens, and that's where change can begin. So it's important for us to look at the words we're claiming and look at how those words are impacting us, not only in how we identify with our own selves and how vulnerable we are with ourselves, but how we are moving through the world. Don't be afraid to look at yourself. That's the path of spirituality. The path of spirituality is know thyself, self-examination and self-inquiry. Yoga, I love, because yoga is all about self-inquiry. When you get on that mat, you come to the edge of fear. You come to the edge of the tightness in your body. You come to the edge of how difficult it is to breathe and move and synchronize all these things together. You come to the edge of your anger at the body. Like, you hit, when we do hamstrings, everyone gets angry because we hold our anger in our hips and in our hamstrings and those parts of our body. So when we do hamstrings, people are like, oh, you get like the sourpuss faces. And if you are a practicing yogi, do the yoga postures you don't like to do, because that's where the work's going to happen. Go to the places that are the most difficult, because that's where the most change will happen, but that's also the place that you're needed. So when we talked about the forgiveness work earlier, those are the places you go to. Those are the places you go to in order to expand yourself a little bit more deeply, to embrace change at a higher level, and to expand your frequency a little bit more. And my friends, my yogis and yoginis out there in the world, that brings us to the end of our show, down to the last minute and 30 seconds here. Tomorrow night, I'll be on with Taylor Hammond Foster. We're going live at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for another episode of Evolved Spirit Radio. We love doing the show. Remember, we don't really know what we're talking about. We just start talking, and it ends up being a really good time. So it's like a free-for-all. Call in tomorrow. Join the conversation. It's really community-based show, so we want you to call in and be part of that conversation with us. 347-326-9263. This is kind of our get the feet wet, get back into the Soul Empowerment Radio flow. Lots of new stuff coming. If there are topics you want to hear me talk about, you can Facebook message me at facebook.com/mbrazel. Or email me at michael@michaelbrazel.com. As always, just know that I love each and every single one of you. You are all beautiful, powerful beings of light. Have a great night, and namaste.